She said in the paperwork, it says that there's no guarantee that Dr. X is going to do your surgery. It can be Dr. Y or Dr. Z. And like, they don't have a choice. And it sometimes it changes the morning of or the day of surgery. And I said, yeah, that's why you pay like half X, half of what our prices are. I was like, if you pay for me, you're getting me. There's no changing. Like, unless I die or like I have like, you know, some horrible.
Hey, it's Mel. And before we dive in, a quick note. The Cutting Edge podcast brings together a board certified plastic surgeon, a licensed bariatric therapist, and your girl, a weight loss surgery patient. We share expert insights, real experiences, and honest conversations. While we cover important health topics, this podcast is for education entertainment only and is not medical advice. Listening does not create a patient-provider relationship. Always talk to your own healthcare team about decisions regarding your health, treatment, or surgery.
Hey, it's Ashlyn. Just one more thing before we begin. I will be sharing some of my own plastic surgery journey, which is personal to me and may not reflect what others go through. And if you're a current client of mine, please talk with me first before listening, because knowing personal details about me could affect your therapy, and your well-being always comes first. Now on to the show.
Welcome back to the Cutting Edge Podcast. I am your host, Mel, and this is where you get all your up-to-date information on plastic surgeries and a therapist and help that way. So today we are going to be talking about how do you pick your surgeon? Because there is a lot of different people out there that are saying they're plastic surgeons and they're not plastic surgeons. And we just want to make sure everybody's like board certified and what all this actually means. So I have help with my experts, of course. We got Dr. Batis and we have Ashlyn Douglas Barnes.
It's interesting. I don't think always they say they're plastic surgeons. Sometimes they say what they actually are, but I think they present in a way that we think of them all in the same. And there are some differences that are important.
That's fair. That's fair.
Absolutely.
I take that back. Not 100% of them.
Because I don't even realize half the time who's who. And I think when I go back and listen to their stuff, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. You know, they didn't say plastic.
100%. And we see it all the time on like posters and billboards, like cosmetic surgery, come over here. But we don't know what that means. A lot of people just assume that's plastic surgery. So
yeah, they definitely use the word cosmetic a lot. I mean, not to say that all cosmetic surgeons are not plastic surgeons, but most plastic surgeons, when we introduce ourselves, we say plastic surgery. We don't say cosmetic surgery. And there's a huge reason behind that, right? And the reason is the American Board of Cosmetic Surgery is not the same as the American Board of Plastic Surgery. Those are two very different boards and two very different education paths.
And so one's shorter than the other, right?
So plastic surgery, I guess I'll start there because that's the one I'm most familiar with. So plastic surgery, traditionally you do either 5 years of general surgery and then 3 years of plastic surgery. So it's a minimum of 3 years. But you've also done 5 other years of training. If you go straight into medical or straight into residency from medical school into plastic surgery, it's 6 years. So that's what I did. I did a 6-year residency. And then a lot of people will typically do a fellowship. So I did an extra year and mine was in plastic surgery after weight loss. When you look at the flip side, when you look at the cosmetic surgery track, they'll accept people from, you know, general surgery, ENT, orthopedics. I mean, I think you can be a gynecologist. And then it's I'm not sure it's actually like official if you go on their website, how long their training is. I've heard things from as little as a few months to a year. I don't think there's actually any kind of like rigorous standard in terms of like what they have to accomplish to get their certification. But one of the key differences is there's the American Board of Medical Specialties or ABMS, and they recognize 20 something boards, ER, gynecology, general surgery, plastic surgery, ENT, anesthesia, and so on and so forth. Okay. The American Board of Cosmetic Surgery is not recognized by the ABMS, because again, they don't have this rigorous criteria. It's not a real recognized field. And there's no oversight by the American Graduate Medical Education Council.
Wow.
So big difference in education, big difference in training. You know, we plastic surgeons also, we have this code of ethics that we abide by. For example, we have to have privileges at a hospital. So even if you're a plastic surgeon in private practice and you have your own suite, like your own OR in your office, like Ashlyn, you mentioned, right, your surgeries were kind of done in the back. Those surgeons, to maintain their board certification, must have privileges at a local hospital. I think there's a certain radius where if something were to happen to your patient, you're able to admit them and take care of them, or at least round on them.
Okay.
The American Board of Cosmetic Surgeons, they don't have those kinds, you know, that kind of requirement. And not only that, they would never have privileges to admit you to a hospital to do the plastic surgery procedure that you're having done, right? So let's say I have a 72-year-old woman who comes in and wants a tummy tuck. Well, it's probably not the best thing to do in the back of, you know, in my office suite, for example. So, hey, I'm going to book you in a hospital to this tummy tuck because you're a little older, you might have high blood pressure, you know, some comorbidities that we don't want to do in a surgery center. The cosmetic surgeon, the hospital doesn't want the liability of having someone not board certified in plastic surgery doing a tummy tuck. So they would never give them privileges to do that. So few differences, but really big differences in training and education and ethics.
Is wild to think. I didn't even know you guys had to have like a radius near, like a certain amount of radius. Just
yeah, mine
case.
Was literally like the door opened and it is the OR of Celebration, the hospital.
That's cool.
Which is why I picked it, because it was kind of in a hospital.
Thinking about bariatric surgery, struggling after surgery, supporting someone you love through their journey. You don't have to navigate the emotional side of weight loss surgery alone. Find a bariatric therapist connects you to therapists who truly understand the bariatric experience. Whether you are a patient, a family member, or a healthcare provider looking for trusted referrals, support is just one click away. Visit bariatrictherapist.com to find a therapist and take the next step forward. Now back to the show.
But I didn't pay for that part.
Right. But my point is, like, even if you never set foot in a hospital as a plastic surgeon, you have your office and it's, you know, in Vero Beach and it's detached from the hospital, that surgeon, to keep their board certification, you have to certify that you have privileges at a hospital within, I think it might be within 20 miles or 10 miles. Don't quote me on the distance, but you know, you have to have some privileges somewhere to be able to admit your patients if there's a problem.
Yeah, I didn't realize they weren't allowed admitting privileges, though that makes a lot of sense if they're not a acknowledged board.
Well, they may have admitting privileges at a medicine doctor, right? Or as a vascular doctor, but the hospital would never let them do a tummy tuck in the hospital.
Got it. So if something goes wrong, they could follow you or admit you, but they can't do
correct.
The actual surgery in the hospital.
But they would never be allowed to do the surgery in the hospital, correct?
Oh, so they only would do surgery in outpatient settings.
Right.
So if something goes wrong,
it won't, I mean, they probably won't be seeing you in the hospital,
right?
Or rounding on you. And I mean, the big thing is the hospital wouldn't give them privileges to do the surgery, and their code of ethics doesn't require that they maintain. Well, they can't have hospital privileges to do a tummy tuck in the hospital because the hospital won't grant it to them. So it's not in their bylaws or standards.
Why would a surgeon choose to go that way then?
I think it's time, because on here, it shows that cosmetic surgery is only for people, like, you have to have your ND or DO,
mm-hmm.
but you only have to do 1 to 2 years of cosmetic surgery fellowship. And it only, it says that it's focused training on liposuction, breast augmentation, Botox and fillers, and body contouring. So, and then for you guys,
it's less than a year.
Yeah, and for you guys, it's 6 to 8 years of surgical residency. So that's a hell of a difference. And they're not even getting a surgical residency done. It's just...
Some of them might, right? Some of them are general surgeons. I think, you know, plastic surgery is the most competitive residency to match into. It has a less than 50% match rate. So, you know, if you're someone who didn't have good grades and matched into general surgery and then still wanted to do plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery is your way in, right? Oh, hey, I didn't get good grades. I'm going to do this other specialty, but then I'm still going to try to get into plastic surgery by doing this kind of non-real plastic surgery extra training. But, you know, it's unsafe. I mean, a lot of these people were the ones who caused a lot of deaths down in Miami when we had the whole BBL epidemic, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Because none of those could be done in the hospital. So if you were doing a bunch of lipo, you were doing that in an outpatient only.
They were the ones doing the BBLs with putting fat into the muscle and essentially killing patients. And I mean, a lot of the laws in Florida around BBLs and fat grafting came out, and I'm not saying that plastic surgeons are innocent, but plastic surgeons like Peter Rubin, who I trained with, and Pat Pazmino, who's down in Miami, along with like some other big names, Dan Delvecchio, they're the ones who did like cadaveric studies. They participated in some of the autopsies, and then they did like dye studies, right? So they took dye, they took cadavers, and then they took fat. And then they did studies on the cadavers to see, well, why are we injecting and where are we injecting? It was really interesting. Actually, they had surgeons inject different color dyes. Some did it blindly, and some believed that they were working in outside the muscle. And then they would then do the cadaver dissection and find and show that surgeon, like, surgeon A, hey, you thought you were outside the muscle. Actually, your blue dye is all over, and you know, it's above and inside the muscle. So the American Society of Plastic Surgeons was big on helping the state create some of the laws and regulations around BBLs to make it safer for patients in Florida.
And why is it such a big problem for BBLs and not anywhere else on the body?
So the gluteal muscles inside and deep to the muscle, right? So you've got skin, you've got fat, and then you've got your muscle layer. Inside and below the gluteal muscles are very large venous system. And if you put fat into a vein, if you put anything in a vein, right, if you have a blood clot, there's also something called an air embolism. If you put air into a vein, like if you're starting an IV and then you just push a bunch of air, you've heard of that before.
Yep.
Or if you put fat, right, which is what we do in fat grafting, anything that gets into the venous system that can then travel into the lungs can create a problem. And so these big venous, these big veins, if you inject fat into them and you inject enough fat, it can go in and cause essentially the same thing as what would cause a pulmonary embolus, but it's called a fat embolus because it's clogging up your lung system.
Whoa.
Circulatory system. And so that's why in the buttocks, it's bad to go into or below the muscle because of the size of the veins. In other areas, you could probably still do it, but the veins are smaller in a sense that you probably would have harder time actually getting into the vein and laying some fat in there.
Got it. Okay. So that makes way more sense. Have you ever had, Ashlyn, like people worry about this kind of situation?
Like plastic versus
cosmetic? No, like more of like they're worried about the fat being done in different spots or
no. I don't think the average person, myself included, until this podcast, had any concern that I don't think I've ever had a client be like, I read somewhere that I think when it comes down to it, most of us are just hopeful. Hence this podcast.
Yeah.
I know. Today's specific topic that our surgeons know best. And just like I don't tell my dentist, like, hey, where are you going to put that Novocaine?
Right.
Hope is that they know where to put the Novocaine. So I do think, unfortunately, a lot of us go into this blindly, not meaning to, just from a, you know, there's only so much research I have done.
Right. Yeah.
But I didn't, especially when I had my surgeries, the internet wasn't the wealth of knowledge that it is now. I do think there's definitely, I think, unfortunately, when it comes to plastic surgery, often financial ends up being the number one. And I ran into this a couple times just literally this week, where when it comes down to it, they know someone is more qualified and they know that they probably will get the better outcome with the most qualified surgeon, but they choose a different surgeon because of finances. And I think that's a really tough conversation, especially as a therapist, because I understand that. But I also understand like safety. And most of my clients are not going to an unsafe, illegal, or shady surgeon per se. But I think there's just this balance of how do we balance finances with
quality safety. Surgeon?
Yeah. Quality, which is tough. I'm sure, Dr. Bates, you run into this where people are like, I want you. I
but I can't.
I had a lady
you.
This weekend, actually. She was messaging me on Instagram. She said, what did she say? She said, you know, she put a deposit down with someone down in Miami, a practice that I know has some non-plastic surgeons. And she said, you know, but then I found you and I've been wanting an appointment. She was like, and then she was like, but I need to know the cost. And she sent me her quote. I think it was like a lower body, less than arms or something. And so like it was half? Probably about a third to half.
A third.
So between a third and half of what our cost is.
Well, that's a hell of a difference.
It's a big difference. Yeah. And it's true. And I told her, you know, I mean, I'm sure the surgeon down there, I'm probably one of the highest lower body lift surgeons in the country.
Volume wise.
Probably top five.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Yes.
Not the most expensive.
Right. I want to make sure we put that out there. People are like, well,
expensive.
Yeah.
Highest volume is in numbers. You know, we do, one to two a week, maybe not, two is pushing it. Two might be like an off week, but one a week, give or take. My Mondays are usually lower body lifts almost every week. And so, you know, let's say 30 plus a year, because I don't operate, I take some vacation, right? And not every Monday is a lower body lift. So I was like, I'm sure I've done way more than the guy you're seeing. I was like, I get that price is, you know, it's a big factor. But at the end of the day, you know, you're putting your life in someone's hands, right? So, you know, it is a lot to save up. And I told her, you know, the guys in Miami, we're not here to compete. I'm not here to compete with their prices. They're attracting a certain population that I think otherwise wouldn't be able to afford plastic surgery. So, yeah, it's a tough, you know, reality to face, unfortunately. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what she decided ultimately when I told her what our price was. But I have a feeling she's going to stay with the guy in South Florida.
Yeah.
And that's really tough because a lot of the, and I have a feeling I might even be able to guess the Miami group. When they bring in the new guy, they make his prices super low to get some volume in for him. And then the prices will go up, but you're going to see the newest guy who has the least amount, but you'll get it in for cheap.
You know, the shocking thing was, I think this was a different practice than the one she,
you know, the one I'm talking about.
I'm sure there's many. They're all the same. And, you know, they change, by the way, after they've had some bad reviews or they get sued, they just change the name, right? I mean, that's the thing in South Florida. It's one day it's like, you know, I'll make up a name like Joe Schmo, and the next day it's John Doe because they had a lawsuit or something. The other interesting thing, she told me she chopped around. She said one of them in the paperwork, and I fully believe this because I've heard other patients who've come and told me this, like after, you know, like they want a revision. She said in the paperwork, it says that there's no guarantee that Dr. X is going to do your surgery. It can be Dr. Y or Dr. Z. And like, they don't have a choice. And it sometimes it changes the morning of or the day of surgery. And I said, yeah, that's why you pay like half of what our prices are. I was like, if you pay for me, you're getting me. There's no changing. Like, unless I die or like I have like, you know, some horrible,
but there's no stand-in for you. It's literally just correct. You there's it's no me. Your microsurgeon partner is not gonna come in and be like, ah, yeah, I'll do a body work today.
I mean, even that, yeah, that's true, but even then, I mean, like, people pay for a surgeon, right? Like, you're paying for that service. Even if I had a partner, you know, unless there was some kind of pre-agreed thing, like, I'm doing your surgery, right? You're paying for,
but that's not a normal services. Thing
no No, no, absolutely not.
Well, no, because we covered that in Fears, guys. If you didn't listen to that, we covered, like, that is a huge red flag if the person that's supposed to do your surgery changes the day of or in this paperwork. I think it's kind of ballsy that they're putting in the paperwork, but I mean, guy,
but
I
that,
don't.
To me, like, that is the absolute definition of a chop shop. You show up and it's next available. I've never seen you. I've never met you. Don't worry about it. We'll mark you up right now. Tell me what you want. Don't worry what you talked about 2 months ago. Tell me now. Like,
so, and I don't know how, like, legally they get around this, but one of the rules they changed in Florida was that your surgeon has to meet you. You have to meet your surgeon within 24 hours or something, or you're at least one day before your surgery. I don't know how they get around that. But that was one of the things they tried to combat these people from, you know, I think we talked about this too, right? People are doing like 6, 8, 6, 7, 8, 9 BBLs in a day, which is like impossible.
Because to me, that's also part of what you're paying for with you is like lower body lift day is just lower body lift day. Mm-hmm. You aren't like knocking out some, you know, boobs in the morning and an extra, you know, arms in the afternoon. Like it's your day and that's it.
Yep. Correct.
It's wild. Wild. And so with the cosmetic surgery, what are you seeing them do most of that kind of makes you a little nervous?
I would say it all makes me nervous, to be honest.
I was just gonna say, I think the answer is all of it for you, Dr.
That works too.
I mean, you have to realize these people. So there's in Tampa, there's a Dr. Sue. I'm going to call him out because he's not a plastic surgeon. He has this place called like Celebrity Arms or something. And I actually had a question about him today on one of my posts, since they said like the patient was asking, or the person, have you heard of this person? You know, I've looked him up. Like, you know, first of all, this guy's an internist. So he, in training, never touched a scalpel. In 3 years, he went to internal medicine. And then he decided he was going to do cosmetic surgery. I think he might be certified by this American Board of Cosmetic Surgery, right? But whether he is or isn't, he has no background on like anatomy, surgical anatomy, or, you know, arm, tummy, breast anatomy.
He's Mr. Arms. So all he does is arms?
I think he calls his practice Celebrity Arms. I don't know if that's all he does. I think he does legs too. Or maybe he's called Celebrity Plastic Surgery. Can look him up and tell us and confirm. So for 3 years, he studied like how to treat high blood pressure and kidney problems and dialysis and whatever, right? And then now he does liposuction, but didn't study like, you know, for 6 years like we do, where are the nerves of the leg and where are the arteries of the leg that I need to avoid when I do liposuction? So when these people have complications, you know, they're usually pretty severe. Actually, I don't know if we've talked about this on a previous episode. There was a gynecologist here in Orlando who killed a woman doing liposuction 6 or 7 years ago now. So people think lipo is like, oh yeah, it's just, you know, you put a cannula and you do take out some fat. But there can be serious complications with lipo.
I think if you look at like all the complications, lipo has some of the highest and more most like problematic, right?
To the volume that it's done, I would say it's probably a lower risk surgery, but if you have a complication, it can be bad.
Okay. That's probably what it was. Of like the complications, yes. It's the one that can be the most problematic.
It can be bad. Yes. Okay, you can
We're also going to call it another place in Tampa real quick because it's called Mia Aesthetics.
Aesthetics. Oh, Mia is all over the country. They have multiple.
That's a
branches.
Different one.
Okay,
but when I click, Miami.
But yes, but I click on it and it says that they're cosmetic surgery and a BBL starts at $3,500.
Yeah.
So ironically, that was the one that I was just thinking about. So they bring in a lot of surgeons. So that's the one that does a lot of volume.
So yeah,
so you can get
Mia,
very cheap.
Mia is, I think they do have some plastic surgeons, don't quote me, but they have many locations all over the country. Like I think they have a couple in Texas. They have one in Miami.
And they have some in New York.
Yeah, New York. And like Ashlyn said, they bring people in, they make them really cheap, and then they just operate like an assembly line. And often, and not calling out Mia specifically, but these places... Because again, I've heard this from patients many, many times. When you call them afterwards, if you have a problem, they are just going to ghost you. So a lot of the aftercare is just not
there. Which
is
interesting because of the lack of ability to follow you through the hospital. The answer probably is go to the hospital because I'm not going to do anything about it anyways. Because
correct.
I can't.
Yeah, and Celebrity Arms has two doctors now, Dr. Sue and Dr. Kardashian.
Kardashian, and, like the Kim?
Yeah. Spells it that way. It's George Kardashian, liposuction and lymphedema expert.
And what kind of surgeon is he?
How is liposuction surgery? Is that technically count as surgery? I guess so. Hold on. Let's see what he is.
Kardashian is an orthopedic resident and then did a hand fellowship.
Hand?
So you tell me how that links into liposuction.
Okay, guys, this is why you guys have to check
bones.
These
people. He's an orthopedic surgeon.
Orthopedic bones. Is bones. Like, I had an orthopedic surgeon for when my leg broke, y'all. I'm definitely gonna have Dr. Mirza fucking liposuction.
How do you end up in that after orthopedics? Orthopedics is so financially lucrative.
That's the thing with this. Maybe lucrative. Maybe you're a bad resident. Maybe you dropped out. Maybe you.
Oh, I was like, why wouldn't they go to orthopedics? For sure.
But yeah, they basically do arms.
I think they do legs. I could have sworn I've seen.
There's some legs too, but yeah. It's a lot of liposuction, a lot of.
Yeah. Which again is not a benign procedure. It's funny, a lot of like in plastic surgery training, and I think this is a fault of us as plastic surgeons, people just say, oh, it's just lipo. Lipo is incredibly easy to do, but I think very difficult to do well.
Seen a lot of bad lipo, especially with like, it creates scarring.
You can get really bad scarring.
Yeah. Like a family friend of mine got it really, and I felt bad. Her and I had it like the same time, and mine came out beautifully and hers did not. And I felt bad because I was like, how did this, and the surgeon played it off like it was, her body.
It was normal.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah. So, I mean, like my partners, my reconstructive surgeons, right? They just hate doing lipo. They do it occasionally because they're like doing fat grafting for a breast recon patient, but they hate doing lipo. I actually enjoy doing lipo. I think it's one of the most satisfying things.
It's like sculpting.
It is sculpting, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's funny. I had another patient this weekend reach out. They were asking about like some 360 something. And I was telling them, no matter where we do skin removal, we do lipo. And she's like, but I don't want lipo. I was like, it's not what you, I was like, you do want it. You just don't know that you want it. Because trust me, lipo is what gives shape and contour.
I think sometimes, particularly bariatric patients, I don't know if this is a bariatric patient, it upsets them to know they still have fat on them. Because it is this funny, like, brag sometimes when people are like, I didn't need any lipo. There's no fat left. And I always think that's kind of funny because I would be very sad if I didn't have any fat left because lipo, like you said, is what helps fix things and make, not fix things, gives you shape.
Yeah. But
I would say like in the last, sorry, go ahead, Mo.
I would say, yeah, people use it as a badge of armor or like, I'm so cool because I didn't have to do any lipo. And it's like, are you though?
I love you, girl. Yeah, I know you're going to listen to this and hear that we just said that you brag, but we love you, but it is a funny brag.
It's humble brag.
We'll not say who that is.
Oh, yeah, I thought you mentioned the person. I just didn't catch it.
But Mel and I both know who it is.
I think, there's probably one patient I can think of in the last like 3 or 4 years who refused lipo.
What was their reasoning?
So she wouldn't give me a good reason. I can tell you she's Argentinian, so I suspect because South America is interesting. Colombia, Brazil, a lot of South America, Mexico, like they love their plastic surgery. You get down to Argentina, they're not like big on plastic surgery, Argentinians.
Because they're naturally beautiful?
I mean, they are.
It's funny because when we were in Argentina last year, we took a tour and the tour guide he's Argentinian. So I'm going to repeat the story. It's not something I said or thought, but he was like, Argentinians, we think very highly of ourselves. I wonder if that's kind of why I'm like, maybe that's why she didn't want the lipo. She wanted the tummy tuck, but she was like, I don't want lipo. And I'm just sitting here.
You're going to look like a box.
You're
going to look like a box.
She was fairly skinny. I mean, could I have done a little bit of lipo? Yes. I ultimately kind of conceded to her because I felt like, sure, like you don't need it. You have a nice shape. She really wanted just her diastasis repaired. She was a hybrid tummy tuck, which is kind of an interesting procedure. She didn't have a lot of fat and she didn't need lipo. Would it have made my job a little bit easier? Yes. But I wouldn't say she absolutely needed it for shaving. But anyway, I think that, that kind of fact, knowing that she was Argentinian, I was like, okay, maybe you just like, you don't want to tell people you had lipo, or maybe that's just something you're, you know, you don't want to.
She viewed it as a more medical.
Correct. Okay. I think that's what it was.
Yeah. Question for you, which this always confused me. Why plastic? The word plastic. Because if you just, I knew none of this, and you said, which one is the real one, the plastic surgeon or the cosmetic surgeon? I'd probably say cosmetic, just from a word. Why plastic? Yeah. Why do they use that word?
Specialty? Yeah. So it's it comes from the Greek word plastikos, which means to mold. And so that's why we picked that term plastic surgery.
I had no idea. That makes sense. So much more sense.
There's always some Latin root to it, though. I remember learning my Latin roots in middle school.
I think plastico as a specialty might have been a better one than plastic. Because that's still like, I've had clients ask me that. So is plastic the one or is cosmetic the one?
It's funny, there's a the former chair at UT Southwestern, Rod Warwick, who's a big plastic surgeon. I remember when I rotated there, one of his big things that I was a student. This was one of the things he would always say. If he asked you as a student or whatever, as a resident, like, what do you want to do? And you said plastics, he took offense to that. And his answer was always like you mean like textiles? So like he really wanted you to say plastic surgery. No, you want to be in plastics.
That's funny. That's the whole like, can you or may I go to the bathroom?
Right, exactly. Yeah. It had to be very proper.
Very proper.
Which just makes, because again, I had no idea that was why it's plastic surgery. I just figured historically that's what we called it. But it does, I know, I do understand when sometimes people are like, why do we use that word? Now I know the answer.
Yeah, now you can use that when you talk to patients. Because you get this question, though, about plastic versus cosmetic.
Sometimes people will ask, but I don't think the general public knows.
They don't know. Yeah,
I think within our circles, we know, but like I honestly didn't know up until a few years ago.
See, and I thought cosmetic, if I want to be like 100%, I thought that was just for like faces. Like I had no idea.
Those are usually either ENT or sometimes facial plastics. Plastic surgeons do a lot of face. I mean, some plastic surgeons are famous for, you know, their facelifts. And the guy who did, what's her name? Kris Jenner.
I was literally just going to say that. Whoever did that lady's face.
What's his name? Steve. God, I know his name and now I'm blanking.
The $100,000 facelift man.
Boy.
It's $250, I think.
But. Yeah, it was a lot. Yeah, it was. Nothing a mere mortal could ever afford.
Whoa.
But damn, it looks good.
It looked great. I mean, he knocked that one out of the park.
Yeah. Does it look overdone?
Steven Levine. I was like, why can't I think of his last name?
What was it?
Steve Levine.
All right. If you want a really pricey facelift, go to him.
You probably can't even get into him. Even if you wanted to pay him $250,000.
I don't know how. Yeah, I don't know what his waylist is like or what his.
But so here's a good question. What are specialties within plastic surgery? And the answer may be all of them, that you want someone who just does that.
I think in general, I don't know about just does that because, you know, like you don't want someone who just does breast reductions. I mean, I don't think there's a surgeon who just does breast reductions, but.
Breast in general, though.
Yeah, I think you want someone who focuses on the area that you're having done. Like, if you want a blepharoplasty, right, eyelid lift, you want someone who's doing them weekly. You want an arm lift, you want someone who's doing them weekly or every other week at the most. Right, you don't want the guy who did one, like, last year and you just walked in their door because you saw the one arm lift photo on their website. And they're like right down the street from you. I mean, sometimes some of these things do require traveling or going a little bit outside of your hometown. We get people from outside of the country, right? Because they come for the expertise. So I think you want to see someone who does high volume of the procedure you're having done or procedures you're having done. So whether it's a facelift or an arm lift or a thighplasty, I think you have to seek that expertise. And like I said, it may not be like in your immediate, you know, 10-mile radius vicinity.
Yeah, sometimes I think it's hard too because we're a little spoiled in Orlando. I feel like we have so many plastic surgeons here. And then you go Tampa, Jacksonville, Miami. The volume of, you know, because I people within the bariatric community definitely have to travel often because, like, they're in areas that just don't have a lot of plastic surgeons, or there's mostly do breast augmentations and some mommy makeovers every once in a while, but are not doing, like, high volume arms.
Well, and
yeah,
I was just going to say, like, what I've noticed in Oregon when I looked and researched, it was more like just tummy tucks and it's just really just mommy makeovers, but no one was doing like the 360 body lift. I did not see that in like almost any of the stuff here. So like that made me cause for pause because I'm like, if you're messing with someone like us, we actually need the 360. And I think it's very important because we also know bariatric patients that didn't get a 360 and are upset because of the little ears on the ends. So it's like,
or their melting butt.
Yeah, or the melting butt situation. So it's like, you really got to look at what they do because you don't want to have like regrets or have to have re-surgeries, revisions because of it if you don't have to.
Yeah, I think, you know, and a lot of plastic surgeons can do, you know, 360 lower body lifts, right? But how well you do them is a totally different thing. Your rate of complications is a totally different thing. You know, and then again, I think that's where volumes come in. So it's interesting. I look at our statistics come out every year, usually in like June for the year before. So if you look at like, I think the two that are the most interesting are lower body lifts and thigh-plasties. And if you look at those two in 2024, because the 2025 ones aren't out yet, it's about 12,000, like 10 to 12,000 for each of those two procedures.
That's it?
Across the entire U.S., correct.
It's only 1,000 a month in the entire U.S. A certain percentage is just you, Dr. P.
Correct, yeah. So that's why I mentioned those numbers specifically, because you look at that and you think there's about 8,000 plastic surgeons in the U.S., right? So now I'll take, like, let's say 12,000 divided by 8. That's like 1.5 lower body lifts per surgeon per year.
And you're doing 50 of them, which steals... Yeah. A whole bunch of surgeons that are doing none.
Correct. So there's a bunch doing none. There's a bunch doing maybe one. And then there's a ton of us doing, let's say, 30, 40, 50 a year. And those are the people when you go to like our big society conferences. Those are the people who are presenting and they put up their results. And it's wow. You know, like there's probably 10, I would say 10 to 15 like surgeons who are doing, you know, one a week, give or take. Like myself. And so those people are, you know, people who patients travel for because they get that extra result.
I don't know why I thought there'd be more than that. Only 1,000 a month.
No, it's really not. Yeah, it's not a super.
What's the one that has the most?
The most common surgery?
Yeah, those numbers, like, are we at like 200,000 people?
Lipo, I think, is in the 100,000s, like 150 maybe.
That's crazy.
The top three are usually like lipo, breast aug, and then I think bleph, like upper bleph.
Is that nose or eyes?
Eyelid.
Eyelid.
Upper eyelid surgery.
I mean, because imagine
as Medicare older, pays for that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So lipo. I mean, lipo is something you can pretty much do in an office awake, right? So like, how do you count lipo? I mean, I do lipo on every case, right? So, gosh, I can't.
So
like I said,
are they counting lipo only when it's by itself or mm-mm. when it's also
every
in combination?
Lipo, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in combination. That's why it's the most common.
Mm.
And then blepharoplasty, you can do in an office, like you numb someone's eyelids up and you take a little piece of skin off and it's like a 30-minute
procedure.
That
one's probably also pretty popular because Medicare covers it for medically. And so like I've had many clients, family member, like that one's pretty common.
But yeah, I didn't realize why people got them. But then, like, I met someone that did. And, like, the before photo, I'm like, oh, you couldn't even see.
And there's, like, a that's test you could do.
Insurance, yeah.
Because,
like, unfortunately, damn. I know that's where I'm heading with these poor eyes and some family members I've had. Where, like, they realize when they did the test, it was so upsetting because they realized how much of their vision they were missing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they haven't been able to see. Is there driving? Like, all the things they didn't even realize they couldn't see because it's such a slow like takeover and you live with it every day. So you don't realize, it's not like you wake up one day and half your vision's gone. It's just slowly encroaching.
When does that like start?
Like, I mean, I think I have a little right now. But I have hooded eyes. I mean,
with a hooded eye.
Yeah. But I mean, you still have like hooded eyes too. You know, I can make space and see more, but no, it's tough. But I've had a couple clients. I mean, I've had some clients that were like pretty medically complicated that got it done and they were fine. I'm always surprised because you're always older when you get it. But like you said, it can be done. I have no idea how they got it done.
Yeah, my nail lady got it done. And I was like, oh, this makes more sense. That's very nice. She's like, I can see much better. I'm like, cool.
And like going back to that point, if you're someone who's getting a blepharoplasty upper eyelid lift, you want the surgeon who's doing them weekly, not the guy who's like, yeah, I did one in training. Sure, you walked into my office. Let's get you on the table because you're going to pay me, you know, $1,000, whatever it is your insurance is going to pay me.
But are those done by plastic surgeons or are they done by eye doctors? Like eye surgeons?
We do them. Yeah.
Well, I thought it was an eye doctor too. See?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like eye surgeon.
Both can do that. Yeah. So an eye surgeon can do it. A facial ENT can do it. Plastic surgeons can do it.
Nice. So what else about cosmetic surgeons should we be watching for? Like, why would we go to a cosmetic surgeon over a plastic surgeon, I guess, is kind of the question. Like, what procedures should be...
I don't think there's any case you should see them for. But I think the question to ask is how to choose your... Like, how do you pick your surgeon, right? I think you just have to do your research. You know, one of the websites, maybe we can put it... on the screen is www.certificationmatters.com. You can go there, you can look up your surgeon first and last name, and then see what board they're certified by. If it's not the American Board of Plastic Surgery and you see something else pop up like general surgery, orthopedic surgery, but they're doing plastic surgery, that should raise a red flag. Cosmetic surgery.
And if you guys go into chat at all, it will... Oh, just ChatGPT. It does pull it up for you. So if you want to know, like, I literally have two links now to American Board of Plastic Surgery and then American Board of Cosmetic Surgery. And guys, I think that it's worth the extra couple minutes to check on this because you're, like we've said before, you're putting your body into someone else's hands. And I know I want the expert that does that, considering we now know not just from going through all the classes and getting board certified, an expert also is someone that's put in those hours. That's why Dr. Bates is talking about the hours, the experience, because I know I want someone that has 10,000 hours doing something like this over someone that just started or actually is really good at taking out gallbladders, but now they're doing this. So it's like, I really want to know, just because it's going to take me a couple minutes and then I'll have peace of mind. I would have way better peace of mind knowing I have a board certified plastic surgeon that's on the list, and you can click on them, look at them better than the cosmetic surgery people, because that is a little scary.
You still can report all of them like all through the board, like the general like Department of Health board.
You can report them through the state licensing board. Yes. Right.
Okay. So that's the same.
I'm actually an expert witness for the state of Florida, and I've seen a lot of those cases come through. So,
you get to be careful who you pick. You get to be on the stand, huh?
Luckily,
but also, I think that's important.
I very rarely go there because all of these things are like, I see the reports come through and I review for them. But
yeah.
But I think that's also important to clarify. There is still a board to report errors. So don't think if you went to a cosmetic surgeon and you had an issue that you would not be able to report it to some kind of board. Board certification and reporting to the board that oversees their license are two different things. I just want to clarify that in case.
Yeah, no, I think that's good.
Absolutely, yes.
Yes.
You can report someone to the state medical board, I guess it is, yeah.
Yeah. Because that doesn't necessarily have to do with board certification, which I think is confusing. It's confusing for therapists too, because like sometimes life coaches, they don't have a board that you could report to. So like if someone does something bad and they're a life coach, but they're not a licensed therapist, there's no board to report. So oftentimes we encourage people. One of the things that we think about in therapy is going to a life coach versus a therapist is we have ethical standards and we have a legal route if something happens to remove our license if things do not go well, where life coaches do not have that. If something goes wrong with them, you can personally sue them, but it's not going to make them stop practicing where I would lose my life. It's like a two different things.
Yeah, so, I mean, these people do still have to have a state license, right? I think, which is the point you're making, Ashlyn. But you raise an interesting kind of analogy, right? It sounds like if you have a life coach, they're kind of operating in this gray area.
Right. So there's no educational background. There could be, but there doesn't have to be. There's no licensing process. So they were never an associate license and then got fully licensed. They never worked under anyone for a long period of time. There's no educational background that's required where it is for us. And there are some great life coaches out. I've worked with some great life coaches. But it's the risk that you have to understand that you're taking is that if something goes wrong, there's no one to report them to. There is no, you know, and there's a reason that, you know, I like the idea of having ethical board and having, you know, ethical standards and a means to report, because I can also report unethical activity within my circle if we have concerns that something's happening that way. So it's a way also for us to keep other people safe within our own profession. The only reason I bring that, I just don't want there to be any confusion, like, oh, if it's a plastic surgeon, I can't report them because they're not board certified. That's two different boards and two separate things.
Yes, and report them, guys. If you need to report them, just report them. Again, it takes like a few minutes and it's really worth it because I know I would report someone if something like shady happened because I wouldn't want that to happen to someone else. Like, we see these botched things. We see all these random shows that show us that, like, people are out there just to take our money and they're not thinking of you in the long haul and the results. Yeah.
But Mel, to clarify on Ashlyn's point, so the American Board of Plastic Surgery isn't going to deal with any, like, inner patient and surgeon issues. That's the state board, but the state board only, the state board, like, you can file a complaint. But a lot of that stuff gets dropped because you have to prove a lot of things to have a problem with the state board, right? Like, they're not going to also litigate malpractice. That's where you have to go get a lawyer and sue. State boards really are looking for like patient abandonment or poor care and not like the type of care where the patient's like, well, they took care of me. It's got to be like very clear and documented, like you either abandoned your patient, you know, they had an infection and you sent them home. I mean, that kind of stuff. It's very hard to actually prove that also. So that's how I think some of these people get away without being board certified in plastic surgery. But if you ever did sue, a lot of times they just settle because like I've had some of those cases come through as a witness. And the first thing I do is usually pick up the phone and call the lawyer. And I'm like, you know, this is like it's a slam dunk. You can't defend this case. And they're like, yeah, I know. I just wanted to see if I could get another opinion. They can't defend those cases.
Well, it makes sense. And
we
know.
We need to do an episode on that because I would love to know what you are seeing. And I don't know what to level you could talk about it. I mean, I've been involved in a, not as a witness, expert witness, just as a literal witness in a pretty gnarly therapist case, which he did not lose his license despite doing something very bad.
I know a lot of times they don't. The guy I referenced earlier who killed a patient in Orlando. So this guy, and I'll say his name is Christopher Walker, I think. You guys can look him up. He was a gynecologist. This is like the trail of this guy's stories. He was involved in some kind of fraudulent scheme where he was getting kickbacks from, I think it was like an insurance company or a mesh company. I'm fuzzy on the details, but if you look him up, it's all there. He was actually in prison in New York.
Kickbacks for everyone not in the medical field is where you get paid for doing something. So yes, a doctor says, for every patient I send to therapy with you, Ashlyn, you send me $10 every time you see them, and I'll keep sending you people, and you keep sending me the $10. That is very illegal because I cannot financially benefit from the continuation of seeing a client regardless of medical necessity.
Continue. Yes, thanks for clarifying. Yes. I love it.
Can you get a benefit of just like the first referral?
No. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Illegal. You cannot send cookies. You cannot. No. The kickback. Nope.
That's a huge problem. Got it.
Huge yeah. problem. So,
and
so
ironically, I worked at a place that we had these little sheets way back in the day, and you would write. I'm like, looking back on it, I was like, that's 100%. They're giving them kickbacks. You were tracking where your referral and how many times you saw. I'm like, looking back on it, I'm like, why would we do that if we weren't sending them a little something every time we saw them?
So he was getting kickbacks. He was found guilty in jail in New York. Gets released. I don't know what ultimately happened with that case. I think he was found guilty. Comes to Orlando. Opens up so the kickbacks were because he was taking mesh out of like women who'd had like mesh put in like for bladder prolapse. And he would claim that it was a problem and it was causing their symptoms, and he would take it out and get money back. Anyway, comes here, opens up a med spa, does liposuction. This woman dies, and I think ultimately at first they only took his license away to do liposuction. So like this guy who's now has a track record of doing like unethical things, dangerous things, they only took away his license to do liposuction. So this is like where sometimes the state boards, you wonder like, how can you guys not be more intelligent about this and actually like punish the people who are doing bad deeds? I believe his license has been suspended now. I could be wrong.
It fucking needs to be. Yeah. This man should not be touching people anymore. Like, legit. Like, this is why you look up your people. Even at med spas, I hear all the time a lot of us ladies go to med spas. You really got to check what these people are doing, because they sneak in there, it sounds like.
He did ultimately lose his license.
Ultimately, good. Yes.
Yeah, I think it took a little while, but he did ultimately. Unfortunately, there is another doctor by the same name, which is why I wanted to double check it.
Poor guy.
Man, that sucks for that other doctor.
Yeah, change your name.
Gosh, I think I would have to leave if I had the same. He's a different type of doctor, but I looked at it. I'm like, why is this guy still practicing? And then I see lower, it's not him. Dr. Downtown.
Dr. Downtown? No, it's him.
Is that really his last
had
name,
some
Downtown?
Level of criminal activity.
No, it was Christopher Walker, but he has,
that's his
student.
Street name.
I think he actually also got in trouble for a criminal activity at the same time, which ironically, that often gets people's licenses more. It's like weird things will get. This is very true in therapy. Like, there's a case I was just reading where like they got more reprimanded for walking on a walking pad while in session. That was unbecoming and unprofessional than this like crazy wackadoo thing that they did that ultimately harmed the client. But the state was like, you know, walking on a treadmill while you're seeing a client, that's pretty unprofessional.
That's just showing I would never being like a role model.
That would make me sick.
Yes, but.
Okay.
Come on.
So I'm trying to see what he did. He oversaw a surgery center with dangerous violations. He lied about pleading guilty to fraud. Oh, when he renewed his medical, this is probably what they got him on, because this is the dumb stuff that Florida boards do.
Oh, he didn't. He didn't.
He lied about pleading guilty to fraud when renewing his Florida.
He didn't disclose.
Correct. That's what they probably got him on.
Like, we would have gave it to you if you would have been honest. But
that's probably it. Honestly, that's so true. As I'm telling you, it's ridiculous what people get away with and still practice medicine.
Yeah, Who runs these boards? Are they actual doctors that run these boards?
We should have a whole talk about that. But, you know, and I get like I'm gonna play devil's advocate here, and I'm gonna try to like understand why they do that. I think a lot of it is, well, like, these people went to school for a long time and this is their career, right?
Yeah.
And it's very hard
in therapy, because it's he said, she said. I think sometimes they err on the side of therapists because they don't have that. But it's, I worked a case like that. And then.
Are you saying the same thing about therapists? Take away their licenses?
They're more, sometimes because in therapy, it's he said, she said, we're the only people in the room. They sometimes will not take away licenses in those cases. because it's he said she it's really hard and are still
yeah but what about when there's proof of like he got you know millions of I'm not saying he got millions but whatever like let's say he got $100,000 in fees and kickbacks like that is clearly unethical illegal
and sometimes whatever. Because I supervise therapists, so we either go to board meetings or I read through, and it's like 1,000 pages, all the reasons that you can end up at the board. And it is fascinating. And sometimes you see, I remember there's one, this crazy case, and like the therapist ended up naked in a hot tub with the substance abuse group. And I was like, so she comes up and I'm like, what? And they're like, explain yourself. And she was like, okay, I know this looks bad on paper. And it did. She's like, I lived in a sober living community. I lived with them on the weekends. We would get in the hot tub. Yes, I made a poor decision. I should not have been naked. And then I'm just like, what? But it's like you
fuck with your license. It really shouldn't.
Yeah, no. And that, ironically, that specific case, she also took money from a client. It was a weird case. She let some people babysit her kids. You're not allowed to have dual relationships. She kept her license. They made her take some classes, remedial classes. They fined her all the money that it spent to investigate. And then she said she was no longer going to work. Here, I will tell you the one factor of how your situation will go with the board. And I'd be curious, Dr. Bates, if you've been to these things. How rude you are to the board is 1,000% an indication of your outcome. If you go up there and you say, look, I remember this one case. She went up there and she said, I'm in the wrong. 100%. Her daughter got in a situation. She covered it up. She shouldn't have done it. She was like, in that moment, I was a mother. I put her on a plane. I flew her out. I got her out of the situation. And 100%, it's a weird coincidence. The whole case was bizarre. But she went up there and was like, I was wrong. And they were like, she's like, whatever you feel I need to do, if you feel I need to take my license away, if you feel like have mercy on my soul. Next person came up, something stupid. Can't remember what it was, but that guy was so rude to the board and the board threw the absolute book at him. He's like, I don't even know why I'm here. This shouldn't have even been brought to the board. I don't even know why this is a thing. I shouldn't have to. It might have even been a PRN case, like where they were ordered to get substance abuse treatment for themselves and they didn't do it. And he's like, this is none of the board's business. I shouldn't have to say all this on public. And I was like, this guy's going to get the book thrown at him. And he did.
Good. They don't be a jerk.
But I don't know if your board is the same way, but it is ironic sometimes how bad.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I just know it's, like I said, and I'm not saying it's a good reason, because even though we've spent a lot of time and money going to school, if you do something wrong, you should be punished, right? I mean, we all know that as kids and as physicians, we have people's lives in our hands. So I think the mistake is a lot more costly than, you know, I don't know, like a plumber making a mistake, let's say, or an electrician making a mistake, right?
And we probably should clarify for people, too, if you make a minor medical mistake or malpractice, you don't actually tend to end up at the board. These are more like Medicaid fraud. And I don't know, one recently that was like way out of scope. So a therapist that was like managing someone's pain medication after surgery and telling them when to take medication and when not to because they were substance abuse providers. And it was like, that's way out of scope versus like a medical malpractice. That's a separate entity. So these are usually more complex mistakes or more like personal is the wrong word, but like super lapses in judgment. Therapists often it's sleeping with clients, which is never appropriate.
Or drinking and then doing surgery, I'm sure should be in there.
Probably end up in your version of PRN in that case.
It's just wild. So basically what I'm learning from this is
so off
Dr. Bates is definitely not comfortable with anybody going to a cosmetic surgeon. We all are uncomfortable with that. You should really look into someone that's board certified, double check everything, because you do not want to be hurt or botch or having to go to Bates for your revision because you wanted to do it cheaper, and I get the cheaper sense, but it's just It's just scary. So is there anything that we missed? Anything you guys want to say that you think that should be said that we didn't get to talk about today?
I think, you know, again, just to reiterate, and you kind of summed it up, but that website, like I said, www.certificationmatters.com, that's the ABMS website. It'll check a bunch of different specialties. So you want to see American Board of Plastic Surgery under your surgeon's name or next to your surgeon's name. And I think the other thing is ask how many of that procedure they do, how often they do it. Look at a lot of before and after photos, right? If they're telling you I've done 50 breast reductions, okay, not everyone consents to showing their pictures, but if you've done 50, you've probably got 3 to 10 who've shown, you know, who've agreed to show for media consent. So it's for those photos, they should be able to easily show you 5. You know, if they're only showing you 5, then maybe, and they've been in practice for 10 years, and they've done 5 lower body lifts, or that's all they can show you, then that's probably a cause for concern, or maybe they're not being super honest with you.
Fair. And for you, Ashlyn?
I think like what I say every single week, ask your surgeon questions, you know, be okay asking your surgeon questions. So how many of these have you done? What are the different ways that you've done them? What success have you had doing them the way that you've done them? How long have you been doing this? What is your board certification? What do we do about hospitals? Like, ask all these questions. It's okay. I think that's like from a behavioral health standpoint, like that's always kind of my like, you got to ask those questions, even if it's scary, because if the answer is the wrong one, it's okay. Then you have the information. You can make a better informed decision versus being like, I just like their before and afters, so I pick them. So ask questions because, you know, their before and afters are going to be their best collection. So I think, you know, having some of those conversations, and if they are kind of a jerk about, you know, there's only 12,000 that happen in the United States. So like, I can't have done 5,000 of them. I'm only once, like, that may be some indication of some, you know, behavior that you may or may decide not to continue with. So, yeah, I think that's good information.
Yeah. And I'm going to piggyback off of you, Ashlyn, because I also think what people, I think it's because we got brought up during a certain generation of like, you don't challenge doctors, right? You, everything they say is Bible. That's what you do. You follow the instructions. But when it comes to this, you interview them. This is like an interview process. You're literally paying them with your money. So if you ask all these questions and they're super chill and awesome and they're good with what they're doing, that's the one you want. You know, like the one that gets defensive and gets frustrated with you. No, thank you. I don't want you near my butt. I don't want you near my boobs. I don't want you to see me naked at that point, because you're going to see me naked. So it's like, you got to think of these things. Like, I know that we've been taught that it's really like to not ask these kind of questions, but it is okay to do.
I give it up to my Gen Zers, because man, they ask some questions. I'm always like, me old millennial, almost Gen Xer, I'm always like, oh, the doctor probably will not. Like, maybe my message is to everyone the same message every week, because it's the message to myself. Ask questions.
I love getting, some questions can be like, okay, I just covered this, but you weren't listening. But I love getting questions, right? I mean, some patients, and I can't think of any off the top of my head, and also when I ask you all, some patients come with really good questions. Like, you know, every once in a while, someone asks me something and I'm like, I've not had to answer this one. Let me think about that for a second.
Let me bring out a diagram.
I've definitely drawn. We have a nice little computer screen that we draw on, so sometimes I'll use that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you guys should really follow Dr. Beta's Dr. Body Contouring on Instagram, because he shows all that stuff. I remember watching this one where you took what their body, like their boobs would, they are now, and what they could look like on that computer, and doing all the things. And I was showing people and I'm like, this is so cool that he can like really generate what a C cup would be, a D cup would be. Like, so then you can really see it.
And you probably have to do a lot of those in order to afford or feel it would be worth it to have such equipment. So, that may be a clue.
You're doing a lot of these. That's a good point, Ashlyn. Yeah, if they have good equipment, you can really feel kind of comfortable. But if you're going into a rinky-dink place that can't do certain things, that's also a red flag to think about.
Good yeah. point. The equipment's not cheap.
No, they can't be. No way. So, but thank you guys for coming on and doing this with me and everybody listening. I'm going to have those, like, all those board certification websites linked on the show notes. So you guys can just literally click and go. So you don't have to worry about it. If you're looking for a therapist, don't forget Ashlyn runs the findabariatrictherapist.com. She's helped sponsoring this podcast. So just go check that out. If you need a therapist, that's a perfect way of doing it. And always go follow Dr. Betas at his Instagram, because I love whoever does your stuff, because they do a great job of showing the befores and the afters and during. Lots of during, which make me happy.
The during is good. Yeah, thanks.
So fun.
I'll have to let her know.
Yeah, definitely let her know. And everybody else, message us if you need anything. We want to make sure you're safe and you're going to the right places. So we do not mind answering those questions. So definitely check on in. And have a great week, you guys. It was nice talking to everyone.